Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with coloboma if I saw that you missed today's show. LinkedIn Volunteer Marketplace. Allison Dorsey is the social impact manager at LinkedIn. She wants you to understand the value of their volunteer marketplace and how to use it. And Stop Talking At Me. Vicky Jones and Christine Hughes will help you avoid common problems and improve your internal communications between people and departments. Christine is Director of Individual Giving and External Relations at Westchester Medical Center Foundation, and Vicky is Planned Giving Officer at Weill Cornell Medical College. That was recorded at Fundraising Day 2014, and both segments today are from the November 7th, 2014 show. And for that reason, you're going to hear some live listener love that is spurious and erroneous, because I didn't quite give Sam the show information about which one we were going to use in time, and it gets a little complicated. You don't want to know how the sausage gets made. Just suffice to say, today's sausage has a little bit of trichinosis, so just a couple of cells. So make sure you wash your hands thoroughly after touching the raw show. On Tony's Take Two, my charity registration webinar. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven and technology-enabled. You'll raise more money, Pursuant.com. And by We Be Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers, WeBeSpelling.com. Here is Allison Dorsey from that November 7, 2014 show. I'm very pleased to welcome from California, Allison Dorsey. She's the social impact manager at LinkedIn, helping LinkedIn members connect with nonprofit opportunities. She also works with nonprofits to build their brands and identify talent. And she leads LinkedIn's Veterans Initiative. On Twitter, follow at LinkedIn for good. That's the number four. And of course, the Arabic number four. Don't use the Roman IV. LinkedIn, Arabic number four, good. Allison Dorsey, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Tony.
I'm glad you're in from California. San Mateo, is that right?
Yeah, we're in Mountain View. It's great to be in New York.
Mountain View. Where did I get San Mateo from? I don't know.
I'm from near San Mateo, so maybe
Okay.
Yeah, I grew up there.
Perhaps that's it. Are you one of the, I got to know, are you one of the IPO billionaires from LinkedIn?
If only. No, I'm not. I joined after that.
We don't have a billionaire on the show?
No.
Not today.
Unfortunate for both of us, yeah.
Okay. What's it like working there? I mean, that's a pretty high energy place.
It's yeah.
World famous, world known. I don't know how many members there are, but tens of millions.
Yeah, over 320 million.
320 million. Okay, hundreds of millions. What's it like working in a place like that?
It's exciting. I think it's a lot like you see about Silicon Valley fun culture. You know, we have the ping pong tables and all the people running around having a good time. And it's also a lot of people working really hard. And we get, you know, there's always the profiles of the super genius engineers who are creating the tools. And we definitely have them running around too. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they barefoot in the wintertime? But it's California though, so it doesn't matter.
That's true. Sometimes they are, but okay. It doesn't get that cold.
Okay. I went to Carnegie Mellon where we were computer science majors. And they were. They'd be barefoot or they'd be flip-flops or even barefoot. I mean, in the winter. Not in the snow, but... And that's Pittsburgh. That's Pittsburgh.
So they had to stay inside.
Yeah, I guess they... they were just shuttling between their dorm and the computer science building, I suppose. But still, barefoot in the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stereotype exists for a reason.
One of my very favorite coworkers, this guy Matthew Schaup, is our hacker in residence. And he's very famous for wearing flip-flops all year round.
Yes. Okay. Does he wear them to holiday parties, like family events?
Everything.
Okay. Right. What's going on there? Anything, before we talk about the volunteer marketplace, anything like insider, anything coming up exciting you can share?
Yeah, I think the biggest excitement right now is the content platform. You know, we have this influencer platform that you've probably seen where it's about 300 incredibly famous people who do their writing on LinkedIn now. And we open that up to all members. And so I can now write blogs on LinkedIn. You can write blogs on LinkedIn. And they get much more attention than they probably would if we were doing it on a standalone website. So content on LinkedIn has been a big new thing for us.
Okay, cool. Now, you mentioned the influencers. Some people are designated. Yeah, I've seen that on some profiles. Like they designated an influencer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's who you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Used to be only there were 300 or so that
right,
could blog? Okay.
Now, when it goes over five, I've always wondered about this. When it goes over 500, mm-hmm. you have more than 500 connections.
Right.
Then it just says 500 plus. But there are people who have tens of thousands.
Right.
But they only still say 500 plus. Why is that?
I think it's because we don't want to create a competition for having the most connections, that your LinkedIn connections should be people you really know. And if we show on your profile exactly how many you have, we might have people just trying to compete to have the most, which wouldn't be a real valuable use of LinkedIn.
I see. Which Conan O'Brien did at one point, right? Famously in the nonprofit sector, because he shouted out Beth Cantor.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right. Because that
and
was.
And her great red hat.
That's right. And he profiled, he had her profile picture on his show, saying that he was lamenting that he didn't have as many followers as Beth Cantor,
right.
who had, I don't know, 300,000 or something like
a
that.
Lot,
or,
yeah,
I think it was in the 300,000s. And he made fun of her, saying if he wore a red hat, maybe he could get more. and then she came back saying, instead of focusing on my red hat, how about you shout out? I think it was Giving Tuesday last year, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't bite. But
I think it still got a lot of attention, though, for Beth and Giving Tuesday. So it,
oh, yeah.
He still helped in his way.
Yeah. Beth was more informed. Beth was more valuable, though. But he brought attention, certainly, to LinkedIn. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And Giving Tuesday is doing very well.
It is.
In fact, later in December, we're going to have Henry Timms on. He's the founder. He's the executive director at 92nd Street Y here
right.
in New York City, but also credited for being the founder of Giving Tuesday.
Yeah, so, I'm a big fan of Henry's and what they're doing with Giving Tuesday.
Okay, so he'll do a recap for us in December.
Great.
But we have you here to talk about the volunteer marketplace. What is this and why is it valuable for nonprofits?
So the volunteer marketplace is how nonprofits can recruit skilled volunteers and board members on LinkedIn. And it's valuable because LinkedIn's the largest global network of professionals in the world, and 82% of them want to volunteer their skills, which is really remarkable if you think about that.
Okay.
Yeah. So the vast majority of people globally are saying, we want to volunteer, we just need to find a place to do it. And so we're working with nonprofits now to post volunteer opportunities and their board positions on LinkedIn and connect those with members. So it's the same system as we use for jobs. They are essentially job postings on LinkedIn. We just offer them to nonprofits at either an extremely heavy discount or for free.
Okay. Where will nonprofits find the volunteer marketplace?
So at nonprofit.linkedin.com. All of the resources for nonprofits are there, as well as links to post opportunities on the marketplace.
Okay. And we're going to talk about some of those resources. I was clicking through. There's some good stuff in there. Why are we still called companies, nonprofits? Can we get that changed? How do we get that changed?
I think it's really just about having one tool that everyone uses. I get this question all the time. People saying, hey, why do I have to have a company page? But
we're in nonprofit.linkedin.com.
Right, right. But it's so much, we can provide so much more value as a company by using the tools we already have than building new tools for nonprofits. So we give nonprofits company pages, we give them job postings instead of recreating tools that are just nonprofit pages and have them be the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, but like just on the screens, couldn't we just say nonprofit name instead of company name? Could we do that?
Yeah. Yeah. I understand okay. that. I mean, okay. we definitely know it's, something that nonprofits would prefer.
It's a little, yeah, it's
we're working
like a
on
little,
it.
Like
yeah.
a little irksome.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're trying to be, we are different.
Yeah, I get
nonprofits
that.
Are different. Okay.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not the first person. I'm sure I'm not the first person to mention it. But okay, so you go to nonprofit.linkedin.com and then you click volunteer opportunities. Is that right?
So on nonprofit.linkedin.com, there are a few different pages. One of them is Find Volunteers, and that talks a lot about posting and searching. There's another tab for finding board members, and that really focuses first on searching because we also offer nonprofits a free premium subscription that enables greater search visibility specifically to find board members.
That's the Board Connect you're talking
mm-hmm.
about. Okay. Okay. And we've talked about that on the show, and you and I may have a chance to talk more about that. BMC, I guess you got Board Member Connect.
Yeah.
Okay. But for posting the volunteer opportunities,
mm-hmm.
you click post volunteer opportunities.
Right, right. So when you're on nonprofit.linkedin.com and you click any of those post links, they send you right into the job posting flow just with a discount code there so that you get the discount.
Okay. Yeah, so a 90% discount, is that right?
Yeah, but actually, I really want to offer all of the listeners to the show free volunteer postings.
Oh.
And so, we will have an option available where if you email volunteermarketplace at linkedin.com and you say that you are listening to Tony's show today, we will send you a free posting code to be able to try out the Volunteer Marketplace.
Okay, we have to say this again. You email volunteermarketplace at linkedin.com. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Right. Okay, and mention Nonprofit Radio.
Exactly.
Okay, and this will be a test to see what kind of validity this show's got. That'll be interesting because sometimes podcast listeners, it's a little tough to get feedback from them. I don't know if you're aware of this, but
yeah.
I know they're out there because I see the download statistics. But to try to survey them, get them to feedback, it's difficult.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to make apologies up front, but I'm just letting you know.
No, I completely understand that.
Because I think they kind of do their podcast listening all in one stream or things like that.
Right. Or they're driving while a podcast is on. And so they're not in front of their computer to email me.
Right.
I understand.
Or I'm the third out of five that they listen to on their Saturday afternoons. We got to take a break. Allison and I will keep talking about the Volunteer Marketplace. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at tonymartinetti.com. That's MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Let's do live listener love. In the U.S., we've got multiple live listeners, but they're masked. I don't know. We don't know even what state it is. I don't know why they're masked. That's unusual. But live listener love to our unidentified U.S. Listeners. And in Japan, we've got listeners in Tokyo, Chiba, and Yokohama. Konnichiwa. There's more live listener love coming. Allison Dorsey. Thank you again for that generous offer.
You're welcome.
For Nonprofit Radio listeners.
We're so thrilled to offer it.
We're looking for more
people to try out the Volunteer Marketplace and get to connect with LinkedIn members looking to serve.
Okay. 320 million and 86% want to volunteer, did you say? Or
82, yeah.
82% mm-hmm. want to volunteer.
And 78% want to be on a nonprofit board, which is also pretty remarkable.
That is. That's outstanding. And Board Connect. I hope we have time to talk about that. But we have covered that on another show before. Okay. What are, that's another little thing. Yeah. It's called job, not volunteer opportunity, right? So look for jobs. Don't look for the window. Don't look for the place to enter the volunteer opportunity. It'll be called job.
Well, when you're on nonprofit.linkedin.com, it'll say volunteer opportunity. And when you click over, it puts you into the job posting flow.
Right.
And then when we send it to members, it comes through in two ways. One, if you're a member who's looking to volunteer and you see all of your job recommendations from LinkedIn, you're right, they're listed as jobs. The volunteer positions are mixed in with those based on your skills and interests and experience, where we think you'd like to volunteer. And then if you are one of the members, I think they're around 6 million now, something like that, members who have added the volunteer and causes field to your profile, we know that you have an extra interest in social causes. So we send you separate emails of just volunteer opportunities.
Okay. And we're going to talk about that because I know you want nonprofits to encourage their volunteers to add that tab. We're gonna get to that. Okay. What are some common volunteer opportunities that you see?
I think our most successful campaign so far has been around social impact managers. Sorry, social media managers.
Yeah.
We see this all the time, especially on LinkedIn. You know, a nonprofit joins LinkedIn, they set up a new company page, and now they need someone to help them manage that company page and post the right content and get more followers. And so that's our most common, is people saying, okay, I need a volunteer to be my social media manager.
And also manage those lesser sites, Facebook and Twitter. Right?
Yeah, those ones
as,
too.
As secondary responsibilities from the social media. Yeah, we focus a fair amount on the show. Amy Sample Ward is the CEO of N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network.
I heard her show with you last week, yeah.
She's on every month. Talking. She's our social media contributor, because I know that that is a big difficulty, a big challenge for nonprofits. I mean, they first deciding where to be, because you have to consider your resources, time, and especially time and money,
right,
where to be, and then how to keep that active. What's your advice around keeping the company page for a nonprofit active? What should we be doing?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is to distribute that responsibility. So it's good to have a social media manager who keeps track of everything and makes sure that there's enough content and that it's content that's engaging the followers. But it's also really helpful to have multiple people in the organization keeping this top of mind and either posting information themselves or funneling that information to that social media manager for them to post. Then the other thing is to post different types of content. You know, maybe a graph speaks to me and I like to see data in that way, and maybe a video speaks to you. So having that variety of content forms so that different types the people can stay engaged with the page.
And we have to remember too, there are a lot of nonprofits, small and mid-sized, that don't have a social media manager.
Right.
Maybe they have a volunteer if they're lucky, but a lot of times it's falling to the person in charge of fundraising or the director of development. And a lot of times, even smaller organizations, it could be falling on the executive director.
Right.
So empowering others, including at those smaller organizations, the volunteers.
Absolutely.
To be feeding you, encouraging and empowering, feeding content, right?
Yeah, and I also think that it's a great role for a volunteer to have who's not looking for a big commitment. If you say, please post into my group or on my company page every Monday, you know, giving a really small role to someone who wants to be involved with your organization but doesn't necessarily want to commit to being your, you know, overall social media manager.
Now, you mentioned opening up blogging. Now, is that possible on the company pages?
So it's on your individual account. So individual. You post it and it links to your profile. And then what we see a lot of nonprofits do is then post links to those on their company page. So if their executive director wrote a blog, then they would link to it on the company page.
And is video a possibility there too?
Yes.
Okay. In the volunteer opportunity section, I mentioned there's a lot of resources. You've got something from some advice from Catch a Fire.
Yeah.
And how to do the best volunteer opportunities profile.
Yep.
There's other resources there too.
Yeah, absolutely. So Catch a Fire provided a lot of those sample descriptions of skilled volunteer opportunities, and they've been a really great partner of ours on the volunteer side. And then Board Source created sample postings on the board side, because nonprofits are frequently posting both board openings and volunteer opportunities. So those templates are on there. And then we also have just kind of advice there. So separate from here's a template description is here's how to make sure you're representing yourself well on LinkedIn. You want to have a strong company page so that when you write your volunteer job description, you're linking over to that company page and you're keeping one centralized brand on LinkedIn. So a lot of those recommendations are on that site.
The Catch a Fire CEO has been on the show.
I know that. Yeah.
You know that too.
Fantastic.
You've been following the show.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. You're not just saying that.
No, I'm not.
Yeah,
promise.
Looked. You really did look. Okay. Let's talk about this is interesting. Those profiles, company profile pages for nonprofits,
mm-hmm.
advice about keeping those up to date. I mean, aside from what you already mentioned, and advice about maybe creating one if you don't have one.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
So that actually, we get a lot of questions around, should I have a profile for my organization? And yes, you absolutely should, but it should be a company page. So you don't set up a separate account like a person. Instead, within your individual account.
Yeah, that's a mistake a lot of people make.
You create
it?
The page,
they,
yeah.
They make a personal page because... Maybe company confuses them or
yeah.
they just don't know. Okay, but it should be a company
page. And I think it feels a little different to do it within your personal account. And so sometimes that throws people off. So once you're within your personal account, on the top of LinkedIn, there is a tab that says interests. Within that tab is the option for companies you follow. And when you're looking at your list of companies you follow for other company pages, there's also the option to create your own company page. So that's where you would do
that's
it.
Where you
and
do
then
it.
You would be the administrator of that company page.
Okay. And how about advice on setting those up?
Yeah. So the setup process actually only takes about 5 minutes. You're going to probably paste in information that you already have on your website about your mission and your values and your programs. And then I think images are really important. So usually I recommend to have your logo be the image that's associated with that page whenever anyone links to it. And then you'll also have the opportunity for a background image. So there, I think it makes sense to have, you know, smiling faces of the people you serve, have it be a really programmatic image. And then post updates. That's the best thing you could do, is post updates there all the time. And I think a little known fact about most social networks is that the majority of actions taken on LinkedIn are one member copying another member. So Tony posts an update about a nonprofit who he follows, and then I go follow that company page too, because I trust Tony and his instincts on which nonprofits have content I'd want to see. So if you are just getting your company page going and you want more followers, a great thing to do is to send the link to your company page out to your board, your volunteers, your other supporters, and ask all of them to follow it. And then when they take that action and follow it, it will be shared with their network. So everyone they know will find out about your organization.
Okay. And that's how your stream gets propagated out.
Exactly.
Okay. Your page gets noticed. Okay. Let's see. Well, we also want to encourage our employees and our volunteers to take actions around our company page, right? And,
definitely.
Okay, let's start with the employees. What should they be doing?
So your employees should, to start with, have strong LinkedIn profiles. So that means is they have a photo, they have a summary, they have their experiences listed, and within their experiences, they've listed you as their employer, and they've linked to your company page when they do that. So they're selecting your name exactly as you have it on the company page. And then on your company page, it will show who all of your employees are. So those brands are linked. And they can also put the name of your organization within the list of organizations they support, which just shows that they believe in your mission as well.
Okay. Is the organizations you support, is that something you have to add, or that is by default on a profile?
So that is within profile. The volunteer and causes field. So you can choose to add that field. And when you're setting up that field, you'll be asked about the organizations you support, the causes you care about, the ways in which you volunteer, and how you'd like to volunteer in the future. And that one is really interesting to us, or how you'd like to give of your time and talent. It's actually the first time we've asked a question on the profile. So it's the first forward-looking part of your profile.
Is this where you get the 82% figure
so
from?
So that's from survey. This new checkbox that says, how would you like to give your time and talent? You can check skilled volunteering or board service. That has, I think, around 3 million people who have checked that. And it's growing really rapidly every week. And so that's part of why we're so focused on getting more volunteer opportunities up on LinkedIn, is to feed the demand from those professionals who are saying, hey, LinkedIn, I'd like to serve. You asked me if I would. And so now we want to be able to answer them and give them the right opportunities for them to fill in.
Let's go to volunteers. What should we be encouraging our volunteers to do to show their allegiance to the organization?
Yeah. So within that same section, they should be putting you on organizations they support, and they should be listing their volunteer experience within that field. And again, linking over to your company page so everyone knows that they're a volunteer with your organization. And then they should be the most active proponents of your company page. They should be sharing your updates out with their network so their network knows that they care about this and they're keeping your mission and programs top of mind for all of the people that they know.
And how do they share?
So when you post an update, they'll see that on your company page.
Right?
Yeah. And connected. There's just a share button on the update. So they'll share it out with their network.
Very simple. Any unusual, weird volunteer opportunities that you've seen?
We see so many great ones. I don't know if this is weird, but our favorite story lately has been One Warm Coat.
Oh, I love stories. Please, yes.
They're
the time,
amazing.
Tell a story.
So One Warm Coat, I think goes to that point of what you're saying. You know, some small organizations don't have a social media manager and might think that they don't have time to do these things. And One Warm Coat is an all volunteer run organization where their board chair, Sherry Wood, has been so forward leaning on all new tools. So when we launched Board Member Connect, she joined it right away to use Premium Search to find board members. members. Then when we started testing out 2 years ago, what would it look like if we were to have volunteer board postings on LinkedIn? She volunteered to test those out. And then she found two new board members through these postings. And one was in Seattle and one was in Texas. And this is a nationwide organization, so people aren't in touch all the time. And she realized, you know, I really want to be able to build community among my board members, have a brain trust so that we can really set the strategic plan for the next 3-5 years. And so let's have a retreat and let's get some volunteers who could be strategic planning consultants to facilitate those discussions, manage the retreat, really get us to a plan by the end. So she posted on LinkedIn again, and she found this strategic planning consultant who said she would love to volunteer her time during that weekend, and that she also wanted to bring in a friend of hers because she thought it needed two planners. So they were amazing. They facilitated this whole retreat. They actually filmed themselves saying thank you for the opportunity and sent it in to us, which was pretty cute. And you know, Sherry Wood, the director of One Warm Coat, or the chairwoman.
It's One Warm Coat?
One Warm Coat.
Yes.
You know, okay. They collected and distributed 4 million coats last year. And it's all volunteers. So I feel like if Sherry and her volunteers have enough time to find a volunteer to manage their social media, really everyone can take that opportunity because it doesn't have to be you. It can be someone else who wants to volunteer their time.
We have a couple of minutes. Let's talk about the Board Member Connect.
Sure.
This is the way of finding board members. Let's remind listeners, because it's been many months or maybe even over a year since we've talked about this.
And actually, we have some updates since then.
Okay.
So one very exciting change on LinkedIn is that there's a nonprofit interest search facet. So this is a free search facet available in everyone's search experience on LinkedIn. And it allows you to identify those specific members that I was talking about who have checked the box saying that they want to do skilled volunteering or serve on a nonprofit board. So if you wanted to find someone in New York who has finance expertise and who is passionate about education and who wants to be on a board, you could select all of those facets within LinkedIn search and find the 100 or 200 or 300 people that meet that criteria.
Outstanding.
Yeah, it allows you
to
take...
It's a very powerful search.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you could go from the 326 million LinkedIn members
down... You like to drop
down,
that number, don't you? You like to say that once in a while.
Yeah, all the time. Okay. Okay, that's fine. But you could go from this huge pool, where the huge pool is not really useful in and of itself. It's only useful when we can take that pool down to the 100 or so that are the exact members
manageable.
You want to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What do you love about the work you do at LinkedIn?
I love the nonprofits that are using the tools. You know, we feel so lucky to get individual stories sent in all the time. I manage our email aliases. So like I was saying, you can email volunteermarketplace@linkedin.com. That inbox gets so many great inbounds from nonprofits saying, you know, I needed a logo and I knew I didn't have money to pay for a logo. And then I found this volunteer on LinkedIn and here, check out the logo he designed for me.
Yeah.
It's so rewarding to just hear how it's actually working.
Outstanding. And the offer again is for free posting of volunteer opportunity. You email volunteermarketplace@linkedin.com. Allison Dorsey, it sounds like you're going to be the one who sees the emails.
I will. And then okay. I'll send you your free posting codes.
Okay. And mention Nonprofit Radio, of course, in that important email. Thank you very much for being a guest.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm glad it worked. My pleasure. I'm glad it worked out that you could come in the studio. And you can find them again on Twitter. Follow at LinkedIn for Arabic number 4. Good. At LinkedIn for good. Allison Dorsey, thank you again.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
My pleasure. Tony's Take 2 and Stop Talking at Me are coming up. First, Pursuant. They've got another free resource for you. It's the Donor Pipeline Report Card. It'll help you evaluate the health of your pipeline, spot possible weaknesses in your donor pipeline, and help you spot areas of greatest opportunity. It's an infographic. You'll find it at pursuant.com under resources. Check that one out. Weeby Spelling. Spelling bees for nonprofit fundraising. They're not like the spelling bees that you are accustomed to through your years. They have live music and dancing and stand-up comedy. And of course, they're raising money for your charity. And they weave spelling in there also. Take a look at the video.
ideal events for millennials. The video is at webeespelling.com. Now, Tony's take two. I've got a webinar coming up. It is Charity Registration Demystified. It's hosted by RallyUp, which is an all-in-one fundraising platform, rallyup.com. I'm going to explain in plain language what this charity registration morass is all about so that you can get your organization properly registered in each state where you are soliciting donations. Like, why do you need to comply? What happens if you don't? And how do you register? And how do exemptions work? And what are the forms? And I'll be taking questions, of course. Get those questions answered from you. It's on October 25th. It's at 1:30 Eastern. It's free. Free webinar. My video with a link to register for the webinar is at tonymartinetti.com. And that is Tony's Take Two. Now, for quick, non-spurious, real-time, Live, Listen, Love, Podcast Pleasantries, and Affiliate Affections, you know that all three of those go out. Last week, I felt bad, gave it a little short shrift. We ran out of time. I hate that. It caused me nausea and borborygmus last week after that happened. So the Live Listener Love, the Podcast Pleasantries, and the Affiliate Affections are going out to you. Here are Vicki Jones and Christine Hughes. Stop talking at me.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of Fundraising Day 2014. We're in Times Square, New York City at the Marriott Marquis Hotel. And with me now are Christine Hughes and Vicki Jones. Christine is Director of Individual Giving and External Relations at the Westchester Medical Center Foundation. And Vicki Jones is Planned Giving Officer at Weill Cornell Medical College. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for inviting us.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to have you. Thank you very much. Your seminar topic is it's all about communication. Vicki, let's start with you. Why? Let's make it explicit. Why is communication so important?
Well, it's especially important in the world of planned giving. For many reasons, your donor may no longer be able to help you realize how the gift is to be allocated when the gift actually comes in. So communications and understanding the donor's intent, documenting that gift is very, very important.
And Christine, what do we see nonprofits not doing so well around communication?
Well, I think communication is the key to relationship building, and I think that is really the basis for our line of work. We have to, you know, build strong, concise, and really just heartfelt relationships. And without good communication skills, you can't do that. So, and you know, we're focusing on internal communication.
Yeah, I was going to say you're focusing on the communication within the office.
Correct. So in order, I think, to have a strong outreach, you need to build a very strong infrastructure within the organization, and that's all based on communication and relationships.
Okay. Where do we get started with this?
So, do you want to take it, Vicki?
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So for me, I know...
Yeah, we don't do like volleyball or tennis or anything. So you can talk for a few minutes. We'll give Vicki a few minutes. It's okay.
Great. So I know for me, a lot of times the challenge has been to build internal communications, internal relationships. And one of the, I think the best way to start is just getting off your chair in your office and going around and visiting the other departments that you need to work closely with, developing strong relationships, inviting them out to lunch, making sure that you're all on the same page, figuring out how you can help each other, how you can work together. And I think it's a lot of fun. And one of the results I've had, and I'm sure Vicki would agree, is... you know, when you leave an organization, you leave with all of those wonderful network, you know, that wonderful network and all those contacts. So,
so it's not always necessary to just send an email to a colleague who may be in the office next door, the cubicle down the hall. We can actually get up and go talk to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, email. Email is so misrepresented or misread in many cases. People will read a tone into something that may not even be there. So I think that when you have communicating face-to-face is a good idea. And then just really saying it was great talking with you. I think this is a great plan. And just reiterating what you decided to do based on those communications skills are very important.
And email, texting, I mean, haven't we sort of lost the art of face-to-face and the joy of face-to-face? I mean, isn't
isn't it, for me, I mean, so much more pleasurable to have a conversation where I can see the person. Now, a lot of times it's not feasible, but when it is, when it's just a walk down the hall, Vicky, I mean, shouldn't we take the walk?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Take the walk.
Okay. You have a lovely, deep bass voice. Well, are you a radio trained or opera singer or anything? Or?
I'm just coming back from either bronchitis or pneumonia. So,
oh, wonderful. Oh, well,
you got me on a good day, Tony.
Okay. I got it perfectly. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, let's go back, Christine. What are some strategies beyond what we've talked about so far? And we have a good amount of time together. What else should we be paying attention to internally?
Well, I'll just give you some examples of what I've done, and it's been fairly successful so far. But, you know, basically, again, identifying the key departments that you need to work with, figuring out how you can work together and making it attractive for them. So, for instance, I'll just skip over. I know I'm in the world of healthcare, but in the world of education, admissions and advancement, if they can team up together, they can work together to pair alumni and incoming students and prospective parents. And it's the most magical thing in the world. And it's so easy to do. But it's just, again, it's just forming that relationship. And we all know here that when relationships are going awry, the reason usually is because of communication breakdowns, miscommunication. So if we can really work on those skills and be very proactive, which I think is what we're talking about, I think we can really change the landscape. Again, building that internal network, building that internal structure really speaks volume when you step outside of that institution and go out into the community and start spreading the good word about that institution. If you've got a strong network inside, it is amazing what you can do.
You know, Tony, one of the wonderful things about working at Weill Cornell Medical College for 13 years is that I've built a lot of relationships, not only with my donors, several of the physicians and faculty at the university, the medical college.
Yeah.
And we also, because in dealing with Planned Giving, you have to work with your director of operations. You have to also, in my particular case, work with Cornell University's Department of Gift and Trust Administration. And when you work with somebody and in that function in so many different ways, you're able to identify this is a problem. How are we going to be able to stop this from happening or reoccurring again? What are the steps that we can ensure that this will not happen?
And you have that relationship history so that you're not only going to your colleagues when there's a problem, but you have a long history of working together around problems and in very smooth times. So that when a problem does develop, you've got that history behind you.
Right.
So absolutely.
One of my favorite things to do too, and then now speaking more towards the medical side of it, is just taking doctors out to coffee and identifying what it is their funding opportunities are, what their hopes and dreams are. And then when you sit down and talk to donors and they're expressing a certain wish to be a part, you know, have a philanthropic footprint at your institution, it's really wonderful because you have all this knowledge in your head about the doctors and the researchers and what it is they want to move forward with. So
I think a lot of what we're talking about is just consciousness. You have to be conscious of deepening relationships, getting up from your chair, going to talk to colleagues, going to lunch with colleagues. It seems, you know, so basic, but we've lost consciousness, I think, about a lot of these things.
Tony, one of the things I've been working on in the past year is to try and break down the silos in Planned Giving. There are many gift officers that I work closely with that will work together in meeting with a donor and discussing a donor situation with the donor on the telephone or meet with them together. And what I try to do is I try to make sure that my colleague gets a shout out when any kind of Planned Gift happens. Even if it comes through the annual fund, let's say perhaps somebody passed away. All right, this, I always look at the donor's giving history and then I'll say so-and-so passed away. We just received $250,000 through their estate plan towards cancer research. They gave for years to Dr. Ann Moore's breast cancer research. And I help the people that have been working and building the program know that they've been successful in a way they're not maybe realizing. So it's, you know, it helps them build their understanding of Planned Giving and make them a little more secure.
But the concern among a lot of fundraisers is that if I give credit elsewhere, then I've diminished my contribution to the gift. I mean, you're a Planned Gift officer, and you're giving credit to the annual fund. A lot of people would think that, well, you know, now my vice president or director of development may not appreciate my role in that gift. How do we overcome that thinking?
What I try to do is I try and say, this is, you know, I laugh and I tell people, I don't get paid commission, so it really doesn't matter. But what I want to do is to show a series of building relationships, of working with gift officers, working in collaboration. You know, we're trying to say that as gift officers, major gift officers, working with our donors, we want to be able to tell them, yes, I have thought about maybe including you in the will. I want my gift officers to work with me on a one-to-one level so that they can hear me saying to the donor, oh, I'm sorry, I have to ask just a couple of questions, and I hope they're not too sensitive. And that reassures the gift officers in understanding and feeling a little more comfortable themselves in approaching those questions. So as far as getting credit, we're working towards making metrics for our major gift officers and principal gift officers that they work or assist on a planned gift or two or three within a quarter. But we're beginning to incorporating that, and by incorporating that, we're encouraging people to work together in a more collaborative manner.
Christine, is there another thought that you might have around measuring employees' methods of collaboration so that it sort of becomes part of their formal evaluation process?
Well, one of my experiences just recently, too, has been that when you collaborate, it really inspires you to think outside of the box. So normally, funding sources that everyone thinks about, you know, again, we're all sort of going after those individual donors, you know, corps and founds, things like that. And recently, it just, I was sitting in a meeting and I heard a doctor give a presentation, and it reminded me of the research that was going on at a pharmaceutical company not too far away from where we're located. So it sort of opened up my creative juices to maybe start talking, having talks with that pharmaceutical company to underwrite some of the research that we were doing. That really, it was a great match.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I was able to work with the doctor, other team members. So we have team members on our development staff that are corps and founds, corporate relations. So we were able to really pull in my individual giving experience with corps and founds, with the doctor and the researcher, and then the senior staff. And it was an incredible collaboration, and it's been very successful. So I love the way that Vicky talks to the collaboration and how important it is and how it's being measured. But what I think the part that really astounds me is the amount of just ingenuity that is a result of you know, innovativeness that's a result of that collaboration.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag NonprofitRadio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
I'm Dana Ostemel, CEO of Deposit a Gift, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
Vicky, you're doing a lot of nodding.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what I love about Plan Giving. I used to joke around with one of my former directors, and I said, it's kind of like McDonald's. Do you want deal number one, deal number two, deal number three? It's like once you get together with your donor and you're talking about what are they interested in, then you start thinking, oh, there's a project. And, you know, how much money do they think they can do? Do they realize they could stretch it out over 5 years? Do they realize that they might be able to create a charitable lead trust that could provide a income for their child and at the same time provide a sizable gift to the medical college?
Yeah.
You know, those are the exciting things. And I think that when everybody starts talking about possibilities, that's what's amazing.
That deal one, two, and three also reminds me of Monty Hall. Let's make a deal.
Mm-hmm. I was on Let's Make a Deal in my early 20s.
Let's Make a Deal? What was your costume?
I had a green cutout piece of cardboard, and my sign said, Monty, don't be a gherk. Let's make a deal.
Don't be a gherk. There's a dill in there. Let's make a dill. You didn't say let's make a dill, did you?
Let's make a dill.
Oh, you did?
D-I-L-L.
Don't be a gherk. Let's make a dill.
Correct.
Did Monty pick you?
I did get picked.
Did you need have a rubber band or a paper clip or something that he was, give $5 for the next rubber band?
No, I was offered door number one, two, and three.
And how did you do?
I did well. I walked away with $25,000.
Oh, my goodness. No kidding. That's well. And yeah, that's outstanding.
Yeah, and a box of New York candy bars. Go figure.
Yeah, it's better than a case of canned squid behind door number three.
There you go, the zonk.
So that was the big deal. You won the big deal?
No, it was the first deal of the day.
Oh, it wasn't even the big deal. Did he ask you if you wanted to trade your?
Oh, yeah, I traded every door.
Wait, but you didn't trade yours in, though?
No, I think that's where I got my first experience in looking at Plan Giving. Like, do I really want to do this, or how about that?
Yeah, so you held on to your $25,000 deal.
I spent it quickly.
Yeah. Congratulations. Oh, that's great. How cool. See that? Glad I mentioned that. By the way, you know, the lights, I don't know, did you notice the overhead lights went out, but Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio with Casey Crown, our lights never dimmed. We go right through that, so it doesn't matter here. Bring on an earthquake. I don't know. There's an earthquake coming, but no, that's true. Yeah, don't do that. Okay, well, what else? Communications. Your seminar description, it's all about communication. You mentioned events. Things can go wrong, miscommunications around events. Does somebody have a story about that or some admonition or something specific about events?
Each one of us are doing a certain topic. I'm sure that both Christine and I could talk about snafus and events, a lot of them, but we're actually today, the workshop I'm going to be leading is called A Donor, a Disease, and a Doctor. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about how a donor came and decided he wanted to support Huntington's research, and he wanted to meet with one of our top physicians that was doing research in that department. And then we're going to talk about the communications that happened involving that deal of, you know, what he wanted to fund. And the snafus with this started with the fact that he was talking with the director of Plan Giving at New York Presbyterian Hospital, and many of you and our donors also were confused as to what's New York Presbyterian Hospital, Weill Cornell Medical Center.
Oh, well, talk about communications. I mean, now that's not your department, is branding and marketing, but you're absolutely right. That is critical. There is a lot of misunderstanding, but just in the general population of New York City, where the heck New York Presbyterian and Weill Cornell end and begin.
Well, it's a wonderful partnership, but what happens is when we're working with our donors, we really have to listen to what they're talking about supporting. In this particular case, the donor met with the director of Plan Giving and the head of the department, and they did a little walkthrough, and the doctor discussed the kind of research he was doing. And the donor was in love with everything that was going on and said, this is great. I want to include something in my estate plan. I want to fund an assistant professorship or maybe a full professorship. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the director of Plan Giving for New York Presbyterian Hospital went, I'm going to have to give you to the medical college because the professorships are with the college. So we have a collaborative work method.
You need to be working together.
Exactly. Yeah. So he introduced me to the donor, and we put together a suggested bequest language for the donor to help achieve his goal.
Okay. In a collaboration.
Well, you know, actually, he handed it off to me.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, because you can, after that point, once you realize that the gift is really going to benefit another organization, you know, as giving professionals, we all have an ethical standard we have to adhere to. And so, you know, knowing that the professorship was, you know, through the medical college, he knew he couldn't facilitate the gift, and he kindly directed the donor in the right direction.
Christine, what are you sharing?
So basically, I'm talking about something that Vicky mentioned earlier about de-siloing, and I gave you a quick example in the educational arena that I used to work in. And just this morning, I had a meeting with a donor I had been trying to get a meeting with for 9 months, and the key to the meeting was the chaplaincy at the hospital. One of the chaplains at the hospital. This particular donor was very connected to him personally, and it was because of that relationship that I was able to get the meeting and working with him in collaboration. So here I am, fundraiser, working with a chaplain to just educate the donor, thank the donor for their gift, and then to educate the donor on the programs that are coming up to see if there was anything she'd be interested in funding in the future. And, you know, it's like magic. I think, you know, Vicky would agree. It's amazing when you have those internal relationships and those collaborations, the strength of your meeting is phenomenal. And I think that really shines through to the donors. So you're really presenting a well-unified, well-educated, you know, you're well-educated, you're unified, and I think it just presents a great picture to the donor.
And you feel the key to those relationships is communication.
Absolutely. So I'm one to always get up from my chair and, you know, walk to somebody's office or walk around the hospital or, you know, go and visit a physician. I think the best place to have those informal meetings is the cafeteria and the coffee shop. And those are sometimes some of my best meetings internally, just catching up with people, finding out how they're doing, you know, finding out what they did on the weekend, and all that time you're building those great trusting relationships internally.
Yeah, Vicky, I see you doing a lot of nodding.
Yeah, it's because that's the wonderful thing I love, is I love building relations. I've always been a people person, you know, in addition to being plan giving officer at Waukwinna Medical College, I'm also the president of the Philanthropic Planning Group of Greater New York. And what I really like about that organization is the closeness of the relationship between plan giving people throughout the entire community. And, you know, it's great to have relationships that build over the years. One of the things that we know by staffing donors, and since I've been there for 13 years, it's really quite unusual in the non-for-profit world, is that unfortunately I've seen some of my gifts become realized. But I've developed relationships with my donors who at one time wanted to make a gift for cancer research because they knew somebody who had cancer.
Sure.
And then what happened is they learned about stem cell or the genome, and they're so excited about the science that's happening today. They're like, oh, Vicky, tell me more about this. What's going on with that? And they want our donors really want to know more about basic science and about what are we doing and how are we curing diseases and what do you mean? Some forms of lymphoma are now curable. They're very excited. They have this huge, you know, diversion of interest now.
And what's the lesson in communications to
you have to keep fluid, because usually what happens in a medical institution, our gift officers work in either neuro, cancer, they work in pods, surgery.
Breaking down those silos the way
right,
you said earlier and Christine said.
Exactly, yeah. Because even though you have a cancer donor, their interests might change. But it's building the relationship with the donor that you're able to really truly understand.
You got to get outside your own world.
Exactly.
Ladies, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony.
My pleasure. Christine Hughes, Director of Individual Giving and External Relations at Westchester Medical Center Foundation, and Vicky Jones, Planned Giving Officer for Weill Cornell Medical College. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks much, Tony.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of Fundraising Day 2014.
Next week, have I ever let you down? I won't again. Professor Eugene Fram returns with his new book, Going for Impact, the Nonprofit Director's Essential Guidebook. If you missed any part of today's show, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. I beseech you. We're sponsored by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled, and by WeBe Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers. WeBeeSpelling.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer. Gavin Dahl is our AM and FM outreach director. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, and this great music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about nonprofit radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. It was like, it was phone. This email thing is weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperston.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.